Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, hexahydrocannabinol, HHC, a legal cannabis substitute, is causing severe psychosis in some young men, warns the College of Psychiatrists. Professor Bobby Smith, a consultant in child and adolescent psychiatry, joins us now in studio. Tell us more. And we're reading about you in a great article by Maurice McDonough in the Irish Times today. Thanks for coming in, Bobby. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks, Ray.
So HHC, tell us what it is and what it does.
Okay, it's a chemical I only became aware of myself about a year ago. It is a chemically modified version of one of the natural chemicals in the cannabis plant. And that modification has caused it to become more psychoactive. So its effects now are more like the natural THC, which is the active drug in cannabis. So it's a new psychoactive drug as far as I can see.
And is it synthetic? Or natural?
It's not natural. It's called semi-synthetic. And right. In that, it's a chemically modified version of a natural chemical. That's why it's semi-synthetic.
And how do people consume it?
So the most common ways, certainly in Ireland, are vaping. So it's sold in lovely, fancy packaging and all sorts of fruit flavours to be vaped, a little bit like nicotine vapes. And then the other way people might use it would be in jellies.
Okay.
So you can buy a jar of jellies.
And do you get it in vape shops or do you have to go elsewhere?
Not every vape shop will sell it. I think it's more some of the stores that specialise in CBD type products maybe, and also some corner shops and some of the vape shops do.
So on a measure of strength then, where would it be compared to the cannabis that people are smoking now?
Yeah, I suppose that's a hard one to answer because it depends on where exactly someone is getting their current cannabis, I suppose,
right, yes.
And how much of this you consume. But it does seem to cause, you know, a stone type effect that is equivalent to that which you get with cannabis. Some young people that we meet would sort of say it's stronger than cannabis. Others would say it's not as strong.
Okay. Why would somebody use this and not cannabis?
Well, I suppose it's sold in a shop is a start.
Yes,
And that might create the illusion that it's been tested and it's safe or something like that, which is completely untrue, unfortunately.
And it doesn't give off any smell of cannabis?
There's no smell, yeah.
Okay.
That can be one of the attractions.
So if you were a teenage boy, you could take the hit on vaping?
Yes.
With your parents, you could go vaping.
Yeah,
everyone's doing it.
Yeah, they wouldn't have a clue just from the smell or the appearance of what you're doing.
Now, Conor, not his real name, he shares his story with Maurice McDonough in the Irish Times today, and he tells us how it affected him. So just go through that for us, if you don't mind.
I think what Conor described there was, I suppose, mental health effects. He talked about getting quite paranoid, and that's something I would hear an awful lot, actually, from the young people we work with, a sense that people are talking about them, or you hear a laugh over the other side of the room and you start thinking or becoming convinced it's about you. He talked also about the mood changes. I think one of the parents in the article referred to, what they used the term a zombie-like effect. So a really, really sedated effect that she noticed in her son after he'd consumed a good bit of this. So, effects that you can see certainly with cannabis, maybe even strong cannabis.
So what effect is this having on a still developing brain?
I suppose that's one of the unknowns. As a psychiatrist, I really worry about the many young people who are smoking cannabis. So I would really think that the prudent thing to do here is work on the assumption this is going to be the same. And what we know about cannabis is that it can tip some young people into psychotic episodes. And I am hearing about more and more young people who have been admitted to psychiatric units with a psychosis that seemed to occur against the backdrop of HHC use. So, and the worry with that, I suppose, Ray, is that it mightn't be time limited. You know, a drug-induced psychosis can be a short term. It might only be a few weeks, clearly hugely distressing for a young person and for their family. But some young people may not recover. They may not recover fully. And it could tip someone into an illness process that they remain sort of cycling in and out of.
For life?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the ultimate worry, certainly, with cannabis.
You're a psychiatrist and this is your area of expertise. So is it affecting the hardwiring of the brain?
I suppose that would be the theory, certainly in terms of cannabis, right?
Right.
That the human brain is developing and changing a lot, really, throughout childhood into adolescence, and changes particularly in the years a bit after puberty. It's really getting remodeled, new connections between some of the brain cells. And the brain's natural cannabinoid system actually seems to be involved in that delicate process of remodeling the brain architecture. So if you introduce an external chemical that targets and hits and overwhelms this same natural, delicate little system, I suppose it has the potential to derail it.
It's a design fault in humans then, because at a time when we know that risk-taking is part of who we are as humans, the brain doesn't like any introduction of drugs.
Yeah, and the same actually with alcohol. It's a bad time to take alcohol when you're 15 or 16. And some extent it does show the wisdom of the ancients, you know, that these rules that societies used to have around not taking drugs or substances until the age of 18 or 21, that we've gotten a little bit casual about, I suppose, in the last 20 or 30 years in Western cultures.
I want to broaden the chat out a little bit, but before we do, on HHC, so cannabis is still illegal in this country.
Yes.
HHC is?
It seems to be in a bit of a blurry grey area. It's certainly not specifically illegal, which is why shops can sell it. Now, there is legislation that Maurice McDonough's article refers to, a statement by the Department of Justice, which refers to what's called the Psychoactive Substances Act. It is a criminal offence in Ireland to import or sell a psychoactive drug, but the comment from the Department of Justice doesn't explain, well, why haven't they deployed or enforced that legislation?
Why haven't they?
I have no idea. I don't know.
So I went online just to a shop, and I was first, it asked me, was I over 18?
Ticked the button.
I ticked the button. Didn't ask me for a passport or a driver's license. Didn't even ask me for my date of birth. Right. So then I'm in, and I'm looking at vaping kits with HHC. And this is a thing called Blue Something, and it's Happy, Calm, Social. There are no long-term definitive studies on the effects of HHC, and everything that follows is based. That's all it says there. So they say no long-term definitive studies. And then as a disclaimer then at the bottom for all their products, they say the most common types of side effects reported by people who use vaping products are throat and mouth irritation, headache, cough and nausea. More research is needed to establish the risk of long-term vaping product use on developing cancer, cardiovascular, respiratory and other diseases. So that's in the very small print. But I could go on as a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and Connor in the article was 12 when he started consuming HHC.
Yeah, it was 12 or 13, I think, yeah.
And it could be delivered to my house in a brown envelope.
Although I think in his case, he was saying himself and his mates used to chip in money together and go to the shop that they knew sold it and just buy it there.
He was told, so they didn't ask for ID.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you see the harm that these products do. So are you frustrated, annoyed, angry?
Yeah, like I suppose it's the College of Psychiatrists, I suppose, issued a statement about this a few weeks ago. So there's general frustration among psychiatrists. We know there's drug use in the world and there's drugs out there and so on, but it really feels like the system is now pushing against us. We know drugs pose mental health risks. The systems out there seem to be working with us to try and minimise the number of people who head down this path. But it seems odd in this current situation to allow entrepreneurs basically have a bit of a free run at this particular drug.
Did you speak to the Citizens Assembly?
I did, actually, yeah.
And what was your area of expertise? What were you talking to them about?
I suppose I was invited in particularly to talk about the legislation and the focus on cannabis.
Right.
And I suppose the pros and cons of liberalising our cannabis laws. And certainly I'd be someone who'd be firmly of the view, based on what we know about public health and based on the experience of Canada and the states, that legalising cannabis is only going to make things worse.
Okay. And did anybody say Portugal?
They did, and there's a lot of confused information about Portugal because drug use is prohibited in Portugal. It's just the consequences if you're caught are different, but you're still not allowed to use drugs in Portugal. Mm. But they have changed the legislation there to have a civil sanction, I suppose, a civil consequence as opposed to a criminal consequence, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but I find it very confusing, this, because if you liberalise the laws around it, and it's still criminal in some places, that in a way you can smoke cannabis, which has been sold by somebody who imported it legally and is a criminal.
That's the case in Portugal.
Yes.
They view the importation and sale of cannabis as a crime, but it's the use of it. You get sent to something called a dissuasion commission, where you have to go and talk to some professionals who will direct you towards help and support if you happen to have an addiction.
What sort of questions were you asked at the citizens' assembly?
I think it was some questions, I suppose, about the quality of the evidence emerging from Canada.
Because what is the evidence in Canada?
I suppose Canada has been liberalising its cannabis policies really for the last 20, 25 years. Initially, like the strategy of the legalisation lobby is first of all to go after what they call medical cannabis, and then you push that to the absolute limit and you arrive at a situation as they did in Canada where basically any doctor could recommend cannabis to any patient for any reason. And they had this network of dispensaries that operated really as a grey market. You go in, it's a bit of a nod and a wink, and you got your half ounce of cannabis. So they decided to formally then legalise it in 2018, but that just formalised a system that was largely there already.
Right. So that's completely legalised.
Yeah, it's completely
so
legal.
So the production of...
Production, sale, distribution...
So there's no criminal element whatsoever?
Well, criminals, of course, can undercut, you see, the legal market.
Right. So the
black market supply continues. But the current estimates in Canada are that maybe 30 to 50% of the market remains in the black market.
Okay.
The bulk of it is in the regular market.
And has there been an increase in usage because there's no deterrent? Because it's not illegal anymore.
I suppose it was rising at such a pace anyway. Like the number of daily users in Canada amongst young adults is about 10 times as many there as you have here. And there's definitely been an increase in child admissions to emergency departments with cannabis poisoning since legalisation. There's been an increase in mental health presentations to emergency departments.
Right.
And there seems to be an increase in young adults with dependence.
Most of these things are on a continuum, Bobby, so we hear about the psychotic episodes and all that sort of thing. But on the sort of the middle and the lower end of the continuum, what effect is it having on people?
I suppose the one that really surprised me, Ray, because I'm in this work for over 20 years now, and my job was created because of the heroin problem, which has fortunately vanished. So I never would have imagined in 2003 I was going to start seeing loads of serious problems with cannabis. But cannabis is much stronger now, and certainly the complaint that parents would notice most, oddly enough, is anger. We tend to associate cannabis as being like a chill-out drug, and wouldn't the world be a wonderful, happy place if everyone was using weed instead of alcohol? But that's certainly not parents' experience. They talk about anger and aggression, walking on eggshells in their own home, usually because it's a son who's dependent on cannabis. And, right. He's either stoned are desperate to get the money together so he can buy another bag of weed. And it's a really stressful. And there's estimates are about 45,000 people who are dependent on cannabis in Ireland, generally young males, and they tend to live with their mum and dad. So I think it's a silent sort of unspoken, undiscussed crisis out there. There must be 100,000, 200,000 people whose lives have been affected by their own or someone else's cannabis dependence.
And is the anger and aggression, could that be linked to depression? Because isn't that a symptom of depression that we don't often talk about?
Certainly irritable mood can be a feature of depression. And cannabis does seem to be a drug that can nudge someone towards more depressive symptoms. Again, a bit like alcohol.
The other thing in reading all of this, I'm wondering, what's the causal relationship? Do people come to cannabis and other drugs because they're not fitting into the world?
I suppose it's really variable, Ray. When you actually ask people why they're drinking or why they're taking drugs, the most common reason is they say it's for fun.
Right.
It's for, it's social. It's what everyone is doing. They thought it might liven up the night or make it more interesting. Now, there's definitely a subsection of people, though, and maybe the more worrying cohort who are going to perhaps develop problematic use, whether it's alcohol or drugs, who will using it to cope. Using it to cope with physical pain, using it to cope with some psychological distress.
But the majority of people just do it for fun.
For most people who use,
The statistics show that young people in Ireland are starting to drink and take cannabis later. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly the news on drinking is positive. I think there's more young people choosing not to drink, really, until they get into adulthood. And there's actually an awful lot more young people just choosing to drink very, very little, even when they hit adulthood.
Right. That's all very positive.
That is all positive. And young people seem to have got the health message that doctors, I suppose, have been trying to communicate.
And are they using anything else instead? That's
not particularly, no. That cohort seem to be quite into their health and fitness and so on. But the cohort who continue to drink, though, still drink, unfortunately, in pretty much the same way that would have been more the norm back.
And because less people are drinking, it's skewing the average intake of alcohol in this country, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. There's a quarter of all adults haven't had a drink in the last year. Right. I find that odd. As someone who I do drink myself, yes. But three quarters of adults drink, and we're the ones responsible for the entire per capita consumption, yes, yes. Which gets divided amongst the entire population. Yes, when, of course, there's a quarter who don't drink at all.
And we don't get that when we get the results at the end of the year for some reason. Now, let's see if there's seems as we have you here. We're struggling big time at the moment after vaping HHC for a year. He is 20, this must be the son. My son is currently suffering badly with paranoia, panic attacks, etc. Finding it impossible to get psychiatric help, GP prescribed antidepressants. Please advise next step. Thank you. Yeah, because that's mentioned in the article as well, that parents are finding it hard, even in the private sector, to get appointments for their children.
Yeah, and it's certainly an issue that psychiatrists really struggle with, where there is alcohol use or drug use against a backdrop of mental health symptoms. It's very hard to disentangle the two. I suppose so. My advice usually where there's both problems there is do seek assistance for both, which means maybe reaching out to the addiction service potentially as well as the mental health service.
We still haven't got that right in this country either, have we? The dual diagnosis thing.
It's getting better, actually. Yeah. You know, like our service, the service I work in, was fortunate to get funding for additional staffing to allow us work now more closely with the CAMHS team, so that, like, I think what that mother, if it is a mum, is describing is sort of her son sort of falling between the stools.
Yes.
And that's been happening, I suppose, for decades. The new dual diagnosis model of care is trying to bridge that gap between the two services so people don't fall between the stools.
Bobby, thanks so much for coming in, and I'm sure we'll talk again. That's Professor Bobby Smith, consultant child and adolescent psychiatrist. Thanks, Bobby. Thank you.
Thanks.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.